the show.
Well, hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Very pleased to be with you again as we head kind of into the summer. I always claim the end of April, beginning of May as the front end of summer, even though it's not, but whatever. We got to take what we can get. Very exciting show for you. Let me give you a little idea of what is coming up. We have got in our inbox segment a question on compatibility, basically a girl asking this guy that she's dating. He's kind of a jock and maybe he doesn't like to read as much as she does. And so really, are they compatible? Are there other things that they could look at that might be, you know, points of connection? And so James and Sandy from our counseling department are back in the studio to address that. So fun stuff ahead there. And then I'm very excited about our culture segment this week because we actually have an interview with Lori Gottlieb. If that name sounds familiar to you, she is a New York Times bestselling author. She is the author of Marry Him, The Case for Settling for Mr. Good Enough. A very fun book. And quite frankly, Lori could have written this book for Boundless. I think I told her that when I was doing the interview. So basically a story of her entering her 40s and recognizing as she looks back that there were probably some decisions she made that kept her from marriage. And some of the grieving that had to go there, some of the things that she learned, some of the really funny things that happened. A lot of parallels with my life, Martha. I don't know about that.
That was a good interview.
Martha and I were like reading that and we're like, what in the world? This is some craziness. This is like she was listening to us and it was stuck in our heads. So, but great stuff and very privileged to have Lori on the show. She wasn't even familiar with Boundless at all. And here she was, you know, talking to Matt Lauer and all these other people in national shows. And then she finally made it to the big time talking to Boundless. So she was very pleased about that, I'm sure. And today's roundtable, keeping our little marriage theme, which we talk about occasionally here at Boundless, relationships and marriage, we are going to talk about something that you guys requested we talk about. Believe it or not, Martha and I occasionally listen to people. I occasionally read your emails. And one common theme that we've heard recently has been, you guys sometimes talk about marriage and just all the challenges, and I'm kind of exhausted hearing about them. And is marriage really this tough? And what do I have to think about going into marriage? And what are the red flags? And what's all messed up with myself that I have to work on? And so we have everyone working on all their junk, so that's good. But at the same time, we want to talk about marriage in a positive light and celebrate the great things about marriage. And in doing so, we had to bring in a couple married couples. Because Martha and I, while we know a lot about marriage, right, Martha?
Oh, a whole lot.
We know a lot about it because we've read a lot of romance novels.
So that's not true.
That is how we've gotten the accurate picture that we hold today. So, no, we had to bring some real people in here, the real deal. So I want to introduce our guests. Of course, Martha is sitting here with me as well. So she'll keep me reined in on my weird comments. But I want to introduce Roger and Diane Ingolio. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Very pleased to have you. Roger and Diane have been married 34 years.
Yes.
Has it been?
That is correct.
Do you have like a calendar and you mark X's each day, Roger? Is that like your little time? Oh, like Shawshank Redemption where he's just chipping away. No, that's not okay.
It's been wonderful.
Well, you guys are both wonderful people just personally, but I know that your marriage has been a great example to many, and I've heard many stories even around here at Focus of people that you've mentored. I know that that's a big passion of yours.
Yes.
Young couples, you have two adult children of your own who made it to marriage.
They did.
Successfully. Yes. We were just talking before we started taping about how, you know, they, when you look at their spouses, you know, just some of the unique characteristics and how maybe they're a little translations there between dads and moms and who you marry and stuff like that. So very fun. We'll be waiting to hear your input on this roundtable. And then we also have Ben and Bree Robb with us. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ben, you'll recognize from past shows as well as our webcast, and we have to bring him in once in a while because he has a British accent. So that's how we maintain our cultural diversity at the Boundless Show. So we would have appreciated it had you brought some British snacks, though, or something.
Yeah. Well, I actually bought you all personal invitations to the royal wedding this Friday.
Oh, good. Awesome.
Wouldn't that have been awesome had you been invited? Or maybe you were invited, but you just couldn't make it.
I couldn't make it.
Okay.
Yeah. William gave me a buzz on the cell phone and said, hey, you know, I want you to fly out, be mm-hmm. the best man. And I said, I'm sorry, dude, I'm tied up, you know, they keep me working hard.
Well, because you had to do, and you had to do this taping.
Yeah,
so that obviously was a consideration.
Just couldn't get over that.
Oh, that's good. Okay, and you two, Bree, obviously you're from the U.S., mm-hmm. so you weren't just over walking, you know, somewhere down Oxford Street or something and Ben found you. You guys, tell us where you met.
Yeah, we met at New Life Church 10 years ago, and I'd come over straight out of high school for...
I was going to say, so you were 12?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. No, I still look 12. I came over straight out of high school for an internship. It was kind of a traveling thing. Did that for 2 years, and Bri and I were both in that program, part of it.
It wasn't a puppet ministry, was it?
It was a what now?
It wasn't a puppet ministry.
Puppets? No, yeah. No puppets. We did do some miming.
Because I don't really see, I'm not okay with that.
one might say God. We were the puppets.
Yeah.
<You're right. laughs> You might want to erase that comment.
Nice. That is awesome. And you guys have been married going on...
7 years in August.
Going on 7 years this summer. Okay. So not quite 34, but definitely some experience under your belt.
Sure.
That is good. Yeah. So you've worked it out. Okay. The first thing I want to talk about here going into this conversation, because like I said, we have a lot of people that are like, okay, maybe they came from a broken home. Maybe they have not seen a lot of great examples of marriage. You know, maybe they just feel like there isn't hope for them in their own marriage, you know, and so there's a lot of discouragement out there. What was it for you? I mean, was marriage always on your mind? Was it always something that would just happen? You would just get to marriage, you would meet someone, or was there kind of this wrestling of, am I going to have to give up something? Am I missing out on some single years, on some blah, 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 doing stuff before I settle down? What was your decision in getting to marriage?
Well, for me, because I was raised Catholic, I figured I could always just be a nun. I mean, they were that great black thing, and I could eat chocolate for the rest of my life, and no one would ever know, and I could go to Africa. So that was a backup plan for my life. And for Roger and I, though, it was interesting because he dated me for 5 years, but I only dated him for two. Yeah, figure that one out. But I think I really always wanted to be married, but it just took a while for me to get to that point with someone and to make that commitment. But I think that was always part of my plan.
Yeah, that's true for me, too. I actually had somebody approach me. It was a family member when I was in the ninth grade, and they asked, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I said, someday I want to be a dad, and I want to be married, and I want to have grandchildren. And for some reason, at that young age, marriage was always important to me. And that's what I saw modeled in my house. You know, I came from a family that worked relatively well, certainly wasn't exempt from its problems, but we saw good marriage, and my mom and dad loved each other, and they had fun, and they waltzed down the grocery aisle, so it seemed like a fun thing to do.
That sounds good. Okay. How about you two, Bree and Ben?
I didn't particularly always have it in my mind. I thought of myself as a kind of a strong, independent person and didn't need to be married, and I wanted to go to Africa, not in a habit, but to go to Africa and work in an orphanage with children. And it seems as soon as I kind of gave up that idea, marriage came along. Ben came along, because it certainly wasn't love at first sight. I just had these grandiose plans and ideas for my life, and none of them necessarily included marriage, but it's interesting how all that came along.
But then she met me. I was just a raging ball of hormones. I mean, we got married at 21, and it seemed like, you know, it's a fairly...
it's a good motivator.
It's a fairly strong kind of internal trigger, you know, for a young man who actually is serious about kind of sexual purity or chastity. And I don't see how... I mean, I guess I could have just waited until I dried up, but I didn't. I instead took a wife, and it was wonderful.
And how'd that make you feel?
Well, this is not just any wife, let me tell you.
Okay. Perfect. Obviously, I selected carefully, but I mean, you have to credit the motivation where credit's due, you know. And it's a God-given thing, you know. It's It's deliberate. It's kind of the mechanism by which the human race perpetuates itself. Mm-hmm. It's strong for a reason.
Yeah, that's true. So had you all had positive, had you heard positive things about marriage? I mean, had it been, because I think now there's so much in our culture about, you know, the ball and chain and the, you know, whatever, and marriage is kind of give what you're going to give up. Had, in your experiences, whether through parents or through friends or through church, had a relatively positive idea of what marriage was?
I think I had pretty much a positive experience, but at least in my family environment, I thought it was interesting that in my work environment, spending so many years in the grocery industry, that people said I was nuts and it was a waste of time. And when you looked at the percentages of successful marriages versus those that end up in divorce, it seemed like there was more strikes against you going into it. And so that made me even more determined to apply the principles that we had learned from Scripture and do what we knew that we were supposed to do. And 34 years later, it's still working. I still like her. She's my best friend. And our kids like us, and we like them. And so life's good. Mm-hmm. Not, you know, every relationship has its issues and its struggles. Mm-hmm. But how you work through those things and allow it to develop your character and your relationship, that's the beauty of it, at least for us.
Mm-hmm. You know, my parents have been married about 65 years, and, you know, I'm not really sure if they really even like each other, but one of the things that was always constant is their commitment for each other. They had made a covenant and a commitment to stay married, and they have been, and that spoke volumes to me about the marriage relationship, that you make that agreement and you stick to it.
We'll actually hear James Grosbeck in our inbox segment. He talked about something in answering the question that I thought was pretty insightful. And he talked about when he made it to marriage, he kind of had this idea that marriage was going to be living with his best friend. He was going to basically be the same person, and he would just kind of have all the same freedoms, but just now he could do them with his best friend. And he said, I didn't realize how marriage would actually change me. And the whole process of really becoming one is it's a differentiating process. And it really, something does happen to you. It's not just two roommates that all of a sudden, you know, well, we love Jesus and we can save on some utility bills. Yep. You know, it was kind of that impression among some people. So what would you say for you guys, how has marriage changed you? And if you can think back to the very front end of your marriage, I know you guys have to go back 34 years, Angolius, but you can do it. What were some of the things that you immediately saw change, and then what over time really have been changers? And then you guys too, Ben and Bree.
I know for me, it was my selfishness. You know, you're used to buying what you want, getting what you want, and I go to the grocery store, and for example, I would buy the crunchy peanut butter and bring it home, and he didn't like crunchy peanut butter. So it's like, well, why do I have to buy the smooth peanut butter when I'm the one that likes the crunchy peanut butter? Then I'm not even going to eat it. And it was just those little things that you recognize, gosh, that's just, you know, really selfishness on my part. So it's realizing for the first time, wow, you know, I shared a bathroom and a bedroom with my sister, and yet in this marriage relationship, it was really showing its ugly little face. You know, I also come from a family where you really had to perform to be loved. And I think that was something that I had never really seen, was unconditional love. And what I saw from Raj is that he really, truly loved me unconditionally. And I that was always surprising to me. And it made me want to love him back that same way and put aside that selfishness.
That kind of lends to that whole comment that Diane made a little earlier, that I dated her for 5 years and she dated me for two. Mm-hmm. For those first 3 years, I was put to the test. And of course, Diane had a philosophy that said, men, you can't live with them, but you can't eat free without them. but you know, she was on this quest. Are you really going to love me unconditionally? Are you going to love me even when I'm being a potty face or whatever the case might be? Where the major change that I think that transpired for me was, Diane is so outgoing and she's so giving. You know, she's the hospitality specialist here at Focus on the Family. Mm-hmm. And this outgoing personality was a very big struggle for me, because I was very shy. Mm-hmm. I was very quiet and more reclusive. I didn't think I had much to offer people. And now, all these years later, Diane really has been a very effective complement in allowing me to really become the man God wanted me to be. Mm-hmm. I've developed skills that otherwise, and she modeled many of those things for me. And that's what's been exciting for me to watch her and how she interacts with other people. And then all of a sudden I felt, well, you know, heck, they didn't, you know, kick her by the wayside when she did that. So beginning to emulate that and learn from her to grow and flourish in my, not only in just who I am as an individual, but even in my ministry and my spiritual walk. Diane's been a tremendous compliment, made me whole. That's really what the word is to make one whole. Mm-hmm. Where she reminds me quite often that I was incomplete until I had her, and now am complete. So,
yeah, this is how shy Raj was. You know, he'd come to the house, and we would be sitting there, and he'd be gone. He'd be out washing his car or taking a walk, and it was like, get back in here. You need to talk to these people. And he was like, I don't know how. So we did this 3-for-1 principle where I would sit down, and I'd say, okay, we're just going to ask Aunt Albreen about how she makes her sauce, and just listen, I'm just going to ask 3 questions, and then I'm going to make a comment, and I'm going to ask 3 questions, and I'm going to make a comment. And you really don't have to give that much or enter that much into the conversation. You just have to learn how to listen and ask good questions and be engaged with people. And it's amazing, when we walked away, Aunt Albreen just thought that she had just, you know, hung the moon for me, because we just paid attention and we asked good questions. And Raj began to emulate that, and that it's just been amazing to watch him grow and flourish.
Well, and it looks like it gave him the courage to grow, because I know, Roger, now you're leading Bible studies and you've spoken in front of larger groups that maybe... Yes. Had you just been the single guy in groceries, you know, without having, you know, experienced what that looks like to practice, and that, you know, it's a growth.
Yeah, not only when it comes to even sharing your faith, but to speak to groups, to do marriage and premarriage counseling, mm-hmm. that Diane and I've been doing for over 30 years. Otherwise, I would have been dead in the water. Mm-hmm. But between Diane and a gentleman, a mentor that God brought into my life 40 years ago, who still is in my life, they saw in me what I couldn't see myself. And the Lord used them to draw that out. So I'm very grateful for
that's
that.
Cool. Ben and Bree, changers?
Well, first of all, I'm wondering, did you get your smooth peanut butter?
You buy one jar of each. Works really well.
Gosh, I think... that I've learned, one of the many things that I've learned is that most of the small things just don't matter. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, and this is something that I heard on the radio years back, this lady from, I think, Brazil, with the most beautiful accent, she was captivating, doing an interview on the radio and talking about her husband, who years ago had died just suddenly in a car accident, got taken from her. And she said that they had been in a fight previous to that, and she wished that the last thing she would have said to him was, I love you. And she wished that they didn't fight about the little thing that they fought about, because had she known she was never going to see him again, it just wouldn't have mattered. All things like that fall by the wayside. And I remember that still to this day and just think, you know, the little things don't matter. It doesn't matter if he doesn't turn off the light when he leaves the room so that we can save on electricity, or... if the toilet gets clogged, and that was our hugest fight.
Oh, okay.
And it doesn't get plunged for a while. it doesn't.
We won't ask why.
We had 2 toilets.
We won't ask why toilets are getting clogged. That could be another round table altogether.
You know, things like that just don't matter. At the end of the day, you have this amazing person and relationship. Your best friend is there. You get to say goodnight, I love you, and roll over at the end of the day, and just the little things don't matter.
Yeah, I think that's really been a hallmark for us, is, and it's something that we heard early on, is that you'll get along well if you just remember your manners. You know, it's like you lots of married couples, with the person they claim to love the most, use the kind of language and speak in tones that they'd never use at work, you know, or with a stranger. They think that it's open season just because the person said they'd never leave, and then mm-hmm. and then everything's out the window, and essentially they drive them away every time there's a small, you know, possibility for an argument. So we have tried to kind of mind our manners. So, on the on the kind of how we've changed thing. I view it as, I mean, we're all kind of on the journey, and for me, marriage is kind of, I hope, and I'm confident actually Brie has for me, accelerated my kind of process of my walk with God, my my spiritual journey, my maturity as a man, because of her and because of our relationship. You know, the institutionally, and I'm sure it's the same for a lot of people, you just have the opportunity to, you know, be truly accountable to someone, because there's someone who sees every minute of your life, and you have the opportunity to truly share the things that are deepest in your heart with complete confidence, and you have the opportunity to, like Diane said, really be selfless. You know, I mean, when you go home to your own home and you've got your own environment where you rule completely at the end of the day, you know, there's still that little part. When it's shared bed and then shared home for the rest of the day, there's, you know, all bets are off, and it's I mean, there's you just have to learn or fail, and mm-hmm. and yeah, so I mean, I think the obvious biggest change for me is we got married as kind of immature kids at 21, and fortunately we sought enough guidance and had enough help in those younger years to choose well and do a few kind of good foundational things and get set on the right tracks, and we've got to grow up together, and it's been wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What would you guys say, you know, I think there are a lot of people in our audience who kind of get to, whether they've hit their late 20s or a lot of people in their early 30s now, it seems like the age of marriage is kind of being pushed back further and further. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because when I talk to people who get married in their early 30s, say, or their mid-30s, more often than not, they'll usually say, I wish I had done it sooner. And sometimes it's, you know, not that there aren't some people for whom God says, you know what, this is your timeline. And, you know, I'm not saying that there aren't exceptions or whatever, but a lot of people seem to hold up these false senses of, I don't know, whether it's fear or just different things that they think they can't get past, or something that they have to make sure they have to have all their ducks in a row, or they have to, and then they realize, wow, you know, maybe that didn't matter. And maybe the whole being a mess at 21 and figuring it out together is a good plan. You know, what, because you guys were married relatively young too. You know, what would you guys say to that?
You know, it doesn't really matter what age you are when you get married. There's still things that you still need to learn and grow into. My kids were a little bit older when they got married, 28, 29, 30. And for them, they needed the extra time. They saw us sitting on the couch with married couples going through struggles, and they were watching this, and they were, as little children, coming in and out, and they got to the point where they would walk out of the room and go, their marriage is not going to last 2 years. They could really be able to discern what was going on with those couples at ages of 10 and 11 and 12. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of scared them a little bit, as they watched so many couples that were struggling mm-hmm. through a relationship. But for them getting married when they did, they both were glad that they had the time, the extra time. Mm-hmm. And so,
well, and it seems in many senses, because our culture is so ingrained in us, that you can have the peanut butter you want, mm-hmm. and they better not tell you to buy another kind of peanut butter. Otherwise, obviously, you're not a good match and you shouldn't have married them in the first place. And it just becomes all this craziness where right. really your compass is set by your own preferences and your own selfishness and that unwillingness to break it. I mean, I think that's where we are, right. you know, in 2011, as opposed to, you know, maybe 1911 and some
yeah, of yeah, I concur going. With Diane. It doesn't matter what age you get married. Probably the biggest thing to remember is just to be receptive and open to the fact that many aspects of marriage, you're going to have to give and you're going to have to take. And you do that at 21 or you do that at 34, it doesn't matter, but just to keep that open-mindedness and be receptive to the grace of God.
Well, thank you all so much for being part of this conversation and for really sharing from your own experiences, you know, whether newer or whether ones that, you know, where you've walked down the road for a lot longer. I think it's encouraging not only to those who are in relationships now and heading towards marriage, but also for those who are single and maybe hoping for marriage someday, sure, but wondering if they can make it work. So it's great to see that it is workable even in a fallen world, and that God really does redeem his people and sanctify us through many different measures, including marriage, and that you can have fun along the way. So thank you all so much.
Thank you for having us. Let our praise be your welcome. Let our songs be a sign. We are here for you. We are here for you. Let your breath come from heaven. Fill our hearts with your life. We are here for you. We are here for you.
Everyone, for this week's culture segment, I am very privileged to have joining me by phone Lori Gottlieb. She is the author of, for those of you that watch any kind of news, or especially like the morning shows where they love to talk about cultural indicators and some of the different things that are going on, she wrote a book called Marry Him, The Case for Settling for Mr. Good Enough, which I was just telling her before we went on air here that she could have written this for Boundless. love that. Lori, welcome.
Thank you.
Very fun to have you. You know, this is funny because as I have been reading this book, literally, as I just said, I'm reading through these chapters and I'm like, okay, here's a Boundless article. Here's a Boundless article. This is, you know, I mean, this is a message that we have been, Boundless has been around for 13 years now. And we feel like we've kind of been this lone voice out there in the culture, speaking primarily to a Christian audience and saying, you know, marriage was created for a purpose. Those of us who ascribe to biblical values believe that it's, meant for something, that it's a sacred covenant, that God meant it for most people. But why in the world can we as young adults, even in the Christian sphere, not seem to get there in a way that's healthy, or in a way that's, you know, before we're aging out, you know, and going to our deathbeds? I mean, my goodness. I mean, most people here on the show know that I'm going to be 40 coming up this summer. And I've had my own little walk as it relates to this. But I just want to launch into this because I am sure, and I know that this book was originally birthed in an article that you wrote for The Atlantic. And you kind of talk about how it was really a discussion with an editor where you started talking about this subject and he was kind of like, wow, that looks like something you could write about. What was your first thought when he kind of put that in your lap?
Yeah, well, you know, it was funny because I write for The Atlantic and I was having dinner with my editor to talk about my next article and ideas for that. And of course, this was not at all on my mind in terms of something I was going to write about. But I had somehow, he was married and talking about his marriage. And I had just come from, you know, another terrible blind date. And I was sort of venting about that. And I said to him, it was just sort of this offhand comment. And I said to him, you know, if I knew back like 5-10 years ago what I know now about marriage and what makes people happy in marriage, because at that point all my friends were married and I was hearing about their marriages, I would have done things very differently in my dating life. And he said, really, how? And we started talking about it. And what I realized was the things that people look for when they're dating have very little to do, or at least observationally I noticed this, and then it was later corroborated in the book when I actually did the research. They have very little to do with the things that make people happy for long-term, passionate, happy marriages. And it's so interesting to me because when you're dating, you are, you know, at a certain point, you're looking for that person you want to spend your life with. So why are we looking for qualities that have nothing to do with whether we're going to be happy in marriage? And why do we just miss those people who actually have those qualities?
Mm-hmm. Did you find that even bringing up the subject of marriage kind of birthed a strong reaction in people? Because when I talk, you know, there's kind of this idea in the culture that, and I know you reference a couple women in the book who say, well, you know, I'm totally fine where I am and how I am right now, so I don't want to settle or I don't want to lower my standards.
Right. Well, I should just say, first of all, let's talk about that word settling before I get to the idea of marriage. The word settling actually was supposed to be used ironically, but clearly it was this big hot button, mm-hmm. And it kind of exploded into this other thing. I do not think that people should marry anybody that they are not truly and totally in love with.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not what this book is about, and that's not what the Atlantic article is about. I think that, you know, what happened was I was doing research for all of this writing, and I came across a survey that asked, men and women, if you got 80% of all of your ideal qualities in a partner, would you be happy? 80%. So this is of your fantasy, you know, like the actual, you know, like the fantasy person that you hope to be with in like some alternate universe. And if you got 80% of those qualities, would you be happy? And 93% of women said 80%. No, that's settling. But the majority of men said 80%. That's a catch. I hope I find 80% of all of that. And so the question is, you know, what is settling and why do we think, and the research also shows, and it's cited in the book, that women are actually pickier than men. And so why is it that both men and women, but more so women, have these ideas about, like, you know, that they have to have everything in the person. And that's just not realistic. Like, nobody is perfect. Nobody's going to have everything. And even the person that you think has everything, once you're actually married to them, you're going to see, you know, there's going to be things over the years that are less than ideal.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to make clear that the book is not about settling, nor is the book about you have to get married.
Mm-hmm.
The book is about, you know, I think that a lot of people think in their 20s, it's so empowering to be single. It's so, you know, I'm so independent. I'm a feminist, and I don't need to get married. Well, no, you don't need to get married. But what happens is a lot of people in their 20s don't have any idea what life is going to be like when you're single, when you're in your 30s and 40s and 50s and beyond. And I remember when I was on the Today Show, and they interviewed these women right before my segment and said, you know, what do you think about this whole idea about what Lori Gottlieb's writing about? And one woman said, like, I don't think you should ever, you know, settle for less than everything you want. You know, she said, like, you could be, I would hold out. Maybe I'll meet the guy in the nursing home. And I thought, the nursing home? You want to be single until you're 80 years old? You know, like, I don't think people really understand what that's like. And there are people who might be perfectly satisfied with their lives if they're single, you know, throughout their lives. But for the majority of people, and again, the research bears this out, that no matter what we say, when people actually get older, they're answering the surveys very differently. They're saying, yeah, I'm lonely. Yeah, I'd like to go through life with a partner.
Mm-hmm.
It's really isolating. I'd really like to have family. You know, people really start to reevaluate their priorities, and it's not like the Sex and the City 20s that they want in their lives when they're 40 years old.
Yeah, and you really do, in the book, call out feminism in regard to this, and I love how you state really what we say here too at Boundless, and that is, where has this sense of shame come from, especially for women, to even admit that you want to be married? I mean,
right.
it's almost like, you know, well, if it happens, it happens. It's kind of a little added accoutrement, you know, whatever. But, you know, we find that even in Christian churches, like, you know, I will say, you know, keep your eyes open for me because I totally, you know, I would love to get married. I'd love to settle down, have a husband and kids. And then I get the, oh, honey, don't worry. You just go out there. You get your career. You do what you need to do. You know, you kind of get the platitudes of, well, you know, you're not trusting God if you say that, if you, you know, and it's kind of like, I see that kind of happening within the culture as well.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, I think I have a whole chapter in the book about how lonely it is to, you know, and how much I want to be married. And it's not because I need to be married. I support myself. I support my family. You know, I mean, I'm certainly not in need of a man, but I want to be married. Mm-hmm. I really want to be married. And I think that when I say I really want to be married, people say, oh, she's so needy. People wrote in these scathing letters about, like, how needy and pathetic. I cite them in the book, you know, after the Atlantic.
I read them. I was just, like, depressed.
She's so needy, and that's so depressing. And if I ever have a, you know, if I grow up and I have a daughter who's as needy as Lori Gottlieb, you know, then I will have failed as a parent. Hmm. Like, really, you failed as a parent because your child wants connection? Mm-hmm. And then they'll say, well, why can't you have connection with your friends? Well, you do have connection with your friends, but it's different from going through life with a partner. And just and for people to be so judgmental about the fact that somebody wants to get married makes me wonder, why does it strike such a chord? If it's really just a neutral thing for you, then why do you attack people who do want to get married?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, and when you cited the whole, which, you know, hello reminder of the whole broadcast news plot, mm-hmm. I was like ready to burst into tears from that, like, because I was exactly where you are. There's my life. What in the world happened? Oh, my goodness. You know,
well,
Albert Brooks.
Right. I mean, I don't think a lot of people grow up thinking, you know, like when they're little, I don't think people grow up thinking like, I'm going to grow up and I'm going to be single and so empowered. And that's my life dream. Mm-hmm. I think that most people, before the culture gets to them, think I'm going to grow up and I'm going to be part of a family, whether that's kids or no kids or whatever it is. But, you know, they don't necessarily dream about going through life alone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I think that yet when you say when you're in your 20s, God forbid you want to get married, you know,
yeah.
It's like, what is wrong with you? What, you have your whole life ahead of you. And what about all of these adventures you can go on in your career? And they act like marriage is going to kind of take that away somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And you can be married to somebody and have a career. You can be married to somebody and have a full life.
Sure. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, you've already alluded to this, the idea of being too picky and men and women and how they differ in this area. Because there are a lot of women who are listening who will say, okay, wait a minute. I know that I'm picky and I know, you know, my girlfriend said that I ruled that guy out because of whatever. But guys, you know, they're just picky too, but they're picky in a different way because guys will generally say, and I think you talk about this in the book, you know, their parameters are, is she hot and is she a kind person? So a lot of women feel like they've already lost the battle because they're just not hot enough. And this idea that guys just know, I think you refer to it as kind of this visceral reaction, like we either want to be with her or we don't. And I know you talk about a girl, Connie, who talks about her experience and saying, I didn't even like my husband when I first met him, but I gave him a chance. And a lot of women will say, women give so many more chances than men do. You know, men just pick who they want to date and then they date her and they marry her or whatever. And women have to, like, cut out all these, you know, different parameters or different standards that we have in order to make it happen. What's the dynamic there?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because men feel that women are so picky, and not the men who are the players, not the men who are those men who, you know, are really picky and have it really easy,
mm-hmm.
but the sort of, you know, the men who really are the men that you want to marry, those men have the hardest time. And they said, one guy put it to me like this, he said, you know, when I go on a date, it's like sitting across the table from an Olympic judge who, you know, they hold up the placards with the numbers on them.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, it's like you start off with a 10 and you get deducted points, you know, like, mm-hmm. like you're expected to be sort of this 10. So instead of giving me points for being like, you know, I'm funny, I'm smart, I'm kind, I'm interesting, you know, any of those things, it'll be like, oh my gosh, he's in therapy. Take off 2 points.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, he's wearing Dockers. Take off another point. Did you see, you know, like, do you know, did you see what the way he chewed his food, you know, whatever it is.
Yep.
And forgetting, by the way, that that woman who's sitting across from him, she has flaws too. You know, there are things about her that are not perfect, but guys aren't, most guys are not really going to nitpick in the same way that most women do. So most women will come back and debrief a date with their friends and they're like, every little thing that happened or he did, you mm-hmm. know, he gets nicknamed like, you know, like Docker guy or, you know, whatever it is. They get these nicknames.
That
and like
is
men
so
come
true.
Back from a date and they're like, yeah, I liked her. I'm going to go out with her again. And that, like, that's their conversation.
Yeah. Well, and women want that amazing story. So they want to be able to tell that story of how he's so amazing and how he's whatever. So if they bring back a story that's less than stellar, it's almost like a reflection on them. I've definitely seen that too.
Right. And in fact, there's a researcher who did these studies where she followed people people from when, like that first date when they met, and she got real-time reports of what happened. So this isn't people looking back and telling what happened. This is people in real time. So she followed them over a number of years. I forget if it was 10 or 20. And she would ask them, you know, okay, so how was your first date? And at the time, they talked about their first date. And then during the courtship, how are things going at 3 months, 6 months, whatever? And when they're married, how's it going? And so they would give real-time reports. Well, the people who ended up, you know, who were happy in their marriages after, I forget whether it was 10 or 20 years, then she asked them again, like, tell me the story of how you met. And the people who were happy, like, totally embellished the story. It wasn't like at the time they might have said, like, yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, it was fine. There were no butterflies or anything. But, yeah, I thought I'd go on a second date. But then when they're telling the story 10 or 20 years later, they're saying, you know, like, oh, I knew immediately that I just knew we had this connection. They were completely embellishing the story. But the people who were unhappy in their marriages, who actually, if they were happy on the first date, if they felt those butterflies, if they felt that connection, they would say things like, you know, yeah, I didn't even think he was that cute on the first date. Or I knew that there were red flags on the first date. But at the time, they didn't report any of that.
Yeah.
So I think people, you know, so when we as single people hear these stories and we look at our happily married friends and they'll say like, yeah, I knew immediately, or you're just going to know. You're going to go on the date and you're going to know. And so don't worry, you can go and, you know, kiss all the frogs before you meet the prince and you'll just know. It doesn't happen that way in a lot of cases. And so if people expect it to happen that way, they're going to rule out a lot of people that they actually might have fallen in love with had they gotten to know him.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I love about the way you wrote the book is that you chronicle some pretty hard truths that you had to learn and really accept for yourself. And throughout the book, especially in the latter portion, you talk about Mondays with Evan and your little chats, basically his way of coaching you through a number of things that you hadn't seen prior to really settling down and recognizing, okay. And I mean, that involved online experience, really, in getting to know guys. And I definitely want you to talk about bow tie guy Sheldon too, bless his heart. But also how that ultimately morphed into you talking about drilling down to wants versus needs and your list and how you got that down to three things and the process that entailed. So talk about that a little bit.
Right. Well, in the beginning of the book, you know, a married friend had said to me, you know, I think you have unrealistic expectations. And none of my single friends thought that, by the way. All my single friends were always like, you know, we don't have unrealistic expectations. We just have high standards.
Yeah.
And the point is, you need to have high standards. This book is all about having high standards, but it's about having high standards about the things that are going to be important and letting go of the things that aren't going to be important. Like, does the guy call you back? You need to have high standards about that. Mm-hmm. That's important. Mm-hmm. But, you know, does the guy read all the same books that you read? That's not so important. Is he intelligent? Yes, that's important. But does he have to care about your book club selection? Not necessarily. So, you know, it's about like understanding what actually is going to be important. And so in the beginning of the book, I had this list where I didn't think I had a list. And my friend said, you know, write down all the things that you're looking for in a guy. And I said, I don't have a list. I'm not like a 16-year-old girl with a journal. I just, you know, when I meet people, I either feel this connection or I don't feel this connection.
Yeah.
And
which is funny, because when I was reading the book, I like, you know, saw the list and I'm like, oh, that's a long list. And then I turned the page. Whoa, it keeps going.
Well, there ended up being, I don't remember how many, I think it was something like 65 things on that list, but they're contradictory things. Like, he has to be, or like hard things to find in the same person. Like, he has to be charming but not flirt with other women. He has to be successful but humble. He has to be athletic but not a sports nut. Mm-hmm. You know, like these like little distinctions. You know, and so I think that it's really hard to find, you know, like this mental checklist that we carry around in our head. And so later on when Evan sort of came into the picture, Evan was, you know, I always sort of laughed at this idea of like people had dating coaches or matchmakers and how silly is that, and you just fall in love and why do we need people to help us with that? And I had spoken in the book to, you know, scientists who study, you know, marriage and you know, happy relationships and you know, all of these things. So I did all this sort of scientific research, but I really felt like I was able to kind of intellectually understand the research, but I wasn't able to put it in practice in my own life. So Evan was this, a dating coach who really called me on my inconsistencies. And at the end of the day, he was basically saying, like, you know, there are all these things that you want, but they're not really important in the scheme of things. And you need to think about what you need, because often people go for, like, all the things that they want, but they don't have the needs there. They don't have, like, the person who's reliable. They don't have the person where it's a reciprocal relationship. They don't have the person who's kind. Kindness is a very overlooked thing. Mm-hmm. People so often will go out with a guy who just isn't kind. Mm-hmm. And then they complain about this. My boyfriend did this, or he did that, or he did this. Well, why are you with him? I love him. Really? You love this guy who's not very kind? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, kindness, generosity. Do you want the same things in life? People don't talk about this a lot. They think it's so unromantic to talk about the practical things.
Yeah.
And I have a whole chapter in the book called The Business of Love, because it's really important that you guys are on the same page in terms of what you want and how you want to live your lives. And if you have drastically different ideas about that, or you guys can't compromise, or you're not willing to compromise, then you're going to end up married to somebody who wants something that you don't want, and you want something that he doesn't want, and you're going to have a really hard time.
Yeah.
So, and values. Do you have the same values? Mm-hmm. So important, and people overlook that a lot too. So, you know, what the person that looks so sexy on a date might not look so sexy when you're like 40 years old with two kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's very different.
Mm-hmm.
So Evan really got me to like look at my wants and my needs and kind of take those things off the list, because I had dated those guys who met all of those things on that list. The problem was maybe our personalities weren't that compatible. Maybe we had different ideas about what we wanted in life. Maybe we had different values. So that, you know, that's really different from having like this list of kind of more objective things on that you're looking for.
Exactly. And so you did get that list down to what, three things?
Yeah, I did. And I think that, and basically said, like, if you have, and they're going to be different for everybody. So, mm-hmm. you know, my three things are not necessarily somebody else's three things.
Yeah.
But I think you have to go through what I did in the book is I really kind of went through this process that even though my specifics might be different from other people's, I think if you go through that process, you come to your own conclusions about what your three things might be. And he said, if those three things are met, you can't not go on a first date with a guy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so there was a guy on the internet. So I would like rule people out all the time, like, oh my gosh, his favorite movie is You've Got Mail. He's gay. Or, you know, just like things like that. Or like, uh-huh. Oh my gosh, he's like, you know, he has really bad taste in books, or, you know, whatever mm-hmm. it was. And they were ridiculous things. And so there was one guy that I saw and I really liked his profile, but there were three things about it that I made me not want to email him. And the first was that he was short. And by the way, I'm like 5'2 on a good day. I mm-hmm. mean, like, you know, if I really round up, I'm 5'2. But for some reason, I had this idea that, like, I'm not going to be attracted to somebody who's under 5'10. It's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, maybe I'll slide down to 5'9. You know? I mean, it's really crazy things.
Mm-hmm.
And he was short. And then there was... he was wearing a bow tie in the photo, and I thought, like, I'm not going to date Orville Redenbacher. Forget it. And even though he was cute, he was, like, wearing this bow tie, and I thought, like, that's just not – I would never even be with somebody who thinks to put on a bow tie in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it said that his job, he wrote real estate, and I had this idea, like, I have to be with someone who's kind of, like, creative and has a really interesting job and somebody who just, you know – goes to open houses on the weekend. That's kind of boring. I don't think I'm going to be, what are we going to talk about? I'm not really interested in real estate. And so Evan urged me to email him. And it turned out that all of the assumptions that I made about him were completely wrong. So first of all, I was attracted to somebody who was on the short side. So, you know, this whole idea that I had, like, I can't be attracted to a short guy. Well, guess what? I was.
Mm-hmm.
And the bow tie was this adorable story that when his grandfather, who he was very close to his grandfather, and when he was little, he said to his grandfather, "Grandpa, I want to be just like you when I grow up." And his grandfather said, "You want to be a dentist?" And he said, "No, I want to wear bow ties," because his grandpa always wore bow ties. So like 20 years later, when his grandpa died, he bequeathed the bow ties to his grandson, because that was their little joke. And so occasionally this guy would wear a bow tie in, you know, to remember his grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, what what an amazing guy who did that.
That was just precious when I read that. I mean, and that was so telling to me to hear that, and your realization of that is a completely different angle on that story that you never would have known had you not gone out with him.
Right, and it's not that the guy had bad taste. It's that he had like this beautiful relationship with his grandfather, and that spoke to his character. Those are the kinds of things I was looking for in a guy.
Yeah.
And then the real estate thing, he actually had gone to architecture school and had a graduate degree in architecture, and he like designed and renovated buildings and did, you know, for like museums and, you know, did all these cool things. So he was actually far more creative than I am, and far more creative than like any guy I've ever dated. And so it turned out that, you know, all of those assumptions that I made were wrong, and people do that. They make these assumptions very quickly about people before getting to know them, and they might miss out on somebody that they might have actually really, really fallen in love with.
Yeah. And I think that's what we're so passionate about here at Boundless is the fact that, you know, absolutely do you need to be attracted to the person? Absolutely do you need to love them and be in love with them? Absolutely, you know, there is a timeline that is different probably for a number of different people. But, you know, when you're 22, 23, 24, think about these things. Start thinking about this and grow up. You know, I mean, before you even get into relationships, grow up and own your stuff and get a realistic picture of what relationships are, what marriage is. Understand that marriage is a wonderful thing. I mean, it's a, you know, but not only for society, but for the couple itself. There's a lot of reasons why it's, you know, been around for millennia. So, you know, but to recognize that, wow, there's a real picture that you need to have with this. And so, you know, don't live only for the fairy tale. I mean, don't get bogged down in the sadness of, oh, my goodness, it hasn't happened for me. And so I'm just hopeless. But really to recognize that it's a good thing, but there are definitely practical steps that you can take towards that and to really, you know, to really look at that. And I think that's what your book does such a great job of doing is shining a light on that from your huge corner of influence. I mean, I just think it's amazing that this really did, you know, I neglected to mention on the front end of the interview. I mean, this is a national bestseller. You have been all over the place with this. And I know even O Magazine and a lot of the others were like, this is some real stuff, some hard stuff, but it is the truth. And that's probably why it's a little bit jarring.
Well, yeah. So. And I, you know, just when you say the word fairy tale, I think this book is about how to have the fairy tale, not the fairy tale that you see on The Bachelor or, you know, these things that don't last. And it's the real fairy tale, kind of, you know, the lasting, passionate, happy marriage. Yep. The people are not getting divorced because they're settling. People are getting divorced because they think that they're marrying this person that, you know, meets that kind of cultural fantasy of who Mr. Right is, and then they get married and they're like, wait, I didn't consider all these other things that I should have considered before I married this person.
Yeah.
So my book is about how to marry the person that is going to last and you're going to be happy.
Yeah. And to have a hand in that and to recognize that as you build in that relationship, you definitely have more of a chance of making that happen. You have a role in that. And I think that's empowering.
Yeah.
You know, more so than just waiting for this elusive, mystical experience.
Right. So. Well, it's funny because the book is now being used in the curriculum at a number of colleges across the country. And at first people said, well, why are they doing this book about marriage in college? People are not thinking about marriage in college. And a lot of the professors said, we think that people, while we're not saying they should get married now, but they need to be able to pick partners in a smart way. And if they get in the habit of picking partners in a smart way and really considering that in their 20s, then they're more likely by the time they are ready to get married to have found somebody that is going to be the right person for them.
Yeah. Well, Lori, we are rooting for you.
Thank you.
Here at Boundless, I am, like I said, you know, I'm in the same boat. And so maybe we'll have to keep each other updated
exactly.
on our situations. But not only rooting for you personally, we're obviously doing that and definitely need to hear your story as it progresses. But also just for the message of this book, the way that you put it out there, the way that you really threw down the gauntlet and called our culture in a way to account for the ideas that we've put out there about relationships and about marriage and these unrealistic things that somehow have been given a foothold kind of in our culture and in our thinking, and we're feeding into that with movies and with everything else that's out there. We've known that, but we're still buying into it. Thanks really for just breathing some fresh air on this issue and really letting women especially know that there is. I love how you say about the book, this is actually a hopeful message. It's, there's a lot of reality here. There's a lot of hard truth, but it's very hopeful. And I think it gives us something to look at, something to deal with, something to address in our own lives, and then to move forward from that.
Right.
So thank you so much, Lori, for being part of this conversation.
Me.
Again, the book is Marry Him, The Case for Settling for Mr. Good Enough. We've been talking with Lori Gottlieb. Check out more info about Lori and her other books. She's written a lot, as well as, like she said, she's a journalist. So she's out and about. She's doing a lot of media on this subject and other ones. So Lori Gottlieb, that's GOTTLIEB.com. You can get the full scoop on her. So we will look forward to hearing more from you in the future, Lori.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thanks.
My foes are many. They rise against me. But I will hold my ground. I will not fear the war. I will not fear the storm. My help is on the way. My help is on the way.
Everyone, we are opening up this week's inbox, and I am back in the studio with James Grosbeck and Sandy Jansen. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks, Lisa. Good to be here.
Hi, Lisa.
Very fun to have you. So we're going to tackle another relationship question here, and this is another little, like, what do I do, because I don't know if this is okay, and can I deal with this for the rest of my life? So very interesting, and here she goes. She says, my boyfriend is a jock. He loves to be physically active and does this very well. I'm an intellectual. I like to be challenged and stimulated intellectually. On the surface, it may seem like those things can complement each other, but I'm also afraid I might be setting myself up for frustration. He doesn't like to read. I love to read. Sometimes it bothers me that he doesn't read more or know more. I also realize that I'm called to deeply respect my future husband. Sometimes I worry I won't be able to do that with this guy, since I often find myself thinking I'm smarter than him. I know that's a horrid thought, and I'm trying not to be proud. The other concern is how this affects his spiritual growth, and therefore mine as well. I always thought I'd marry a man and we'd study huge portions of scripture together, read books on scripture, study commentaries, etc. How much should these differences affect my decision to continue to move forward or not? So she's really hanging the relationship on this, so probably needs a little bit of insight. What do you guys think?
My first question is, because it's not clear from the what she wrote to us, is I'm not clear whether her boyfriend is a Christian or not. Mm-hmm. And we as Christians read the scripture about not being unequally yoked and often ignore that and go into, particularly women are often do this. They think, well, he loves me. And he's going to change after we get married. And so they will marry someone who perhaps is nominal in their faith or not fully committed as a Christian. And they often find themselves in a very lonely marriage because the belief systems are different. Mm-hmm. And so that would be my first question to her. is he a believer, and do you share the same values about being committed to marriage for a lifetime? Mm-hmm. That would be crucial. Mm-hmm. James?
A couple points here are really important. One is, where are you connecting? In a marriage, in a relationship, you need to have points of connection, and they need to be solid. You don't need a whole lot, but you do need some. And she's pointing to the intellectual one. Or let me say it this way. He's very interested in the outdoors, it seems. He's very, very physical. When we look at creation, God created a physical universe. Very, very important. He also created us with a desire to know more. In this case, she likes to read. Now, I don't think she wants to marry a library. And you get that opinion from her, is that she would be happy, I doubt it, just marrying a library and spending time there. I don't think that's what she's talking about. I think she's talking about intellectual stimulation. So can they find other areas in terms of where they really connect and they connect well? The second point is here, and she alluded to it, is this whole idea of respect. Like, for example, if her fiancé is saying to her, you know, I'm not much of a reader, I have dyslexia, it's always been a problem, I've never been encouraged in that area, but, you know, I really respect you and I can really profit by what you read, and that's something that I can learn to do with you. And then on the other hand, if she says, you know, I'm not very much of a physical person, but you know what, I really admire that about you, and I can really learn to do physical things. So if they have admiration and respect for the other person's abilities, gifts, desires, things that they enjoy, terrific. But if there's disdain, if there's negative feelings about it, and disrespect, boy, you do not want to go that way. Mm-hmm. And the thing I also wonder about this, if this is such a driver for her, and she's married to a guy that doesn't like this at all and is unwilling to participate in it, who's she going to be attracted to? Well, she's going to start forming a relationship, most likely, with another guy that has this interest, and then that can go down a very negative road for their marriage. So mm-hmm. those are a couple things for her to keep in mind.
Yeah. I didn't make the assumption here that he wasn't a believer, but I think what she's doing is projecting on him the feeling that to be a leader in a marriage, he has to be an intellectual. That's what it seems like she's saying, and I think that could be a little bit dangerous to say.
You're absolutely right, and we know people that may know a lot in their head about scripture and about theology, but in no way it has sunk down into their heart, much less living it out.
Right.
They just live in their head.
Yeah.
And you're exactly right, Lisa. That can be very, very dangerous.
Or guys who could be extremely solid in their faith, but because they don't have a lot of super outward manifestations of it, maybe they're not extroverts. Or because I know I had a friend who got married, and she and her husband really struggled with her perception of, to be a leader of our kids spiritually, I want him to come up with these elaborate scripture memory programs. I want to sit in the living room every night with his guitar and he's leading choruses. And he's like, that is not even me. I can't do that, you know? And they really had to work through what was her perception of him leading spiritually in their family.
So. Yeah, and the thing about spiritually too is that some people can get an awful lot out of just a story of scripture. And we were talking about that earlier today, Sandy, is that ability to read a passage of scripture over and over and over again and to let it sink from your mind into your heart, into your behavior. And really, that can be a transformational process. You don't need to have scripture memorized in your head to affect your heart. Mm-hmm. So we don't know where these two people are spiritually, but you're right. Making the assumption of knowing an awful lot of theology doesn't necessarily, you know, reminds me of scripture. The Pharisees knew a lot about scripture, but they didn't get it. Mm-hmm. And that would be the danger.
Yeah.
And one suggestion that I would make, since he really is an athlete and loves the outdoors, that she may consider going with him and taking her Bible with him and being outdoors with him in God's creation in a setting that he feels comfortable in, and then focusing on something, a devotional, a scripture, something that's meaningful to her, but it's in a setting where he is also comfortable. And that would be really embracing both of them. When you marry someone, you get the complete package. The other thing I would say for this couple is that it would be really important, as I think it is for everybody, to get some very good premarital counseling, where they can flush out through dialogue and possibly some testing some of these differences and be able to kind of put those out on the table before they get married. If they don't do it prior to marriage, they'll be faced with it probably afterward.
Yeah, good thoughts. All right. Well, thank you, James and Sandy. Very helpful insights as you weighed in on this. And it's interesting because, I mean, these are real people in real life situations. So it really does, you know, make a difference what insight you guys have to share. So thanks so much for doing that.
Thanks, great Lisa. To be here, Lisa.
All right. Well, that is it for this week's show. Continue to write to us at editor@boundless.org so we can field your questions on future shows, because we want to do that. Except for the super crazy ones, those we just throw out. No, I'm just teasing. We want to answer your questions and want to help you, because you're young adults and you're wading through all of this stuff. So in the meantime, stay part of the conversation via the blog, and make sure you continue to listen here. Check out the latest articles, and hit us up on Facebook as well, because we will possibly respond to you there. But we love to talk to you. So that is it for this week's show. I am your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.